the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Delighted to have back on the programme one of Ireland's greatest ever footballers and managers, Martin O'Neill, who has written a new book which is so timely. It's called The Changing Game, The Past, Present and Future of Football. Martin, thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you for asking.
What prompted you to write the book at this stage of your career?
A really good question. I did an autobiography a couple of years ago.
You were here with us at the time,
that's
yes.
That's right. And then the literary agent who was really probably responsible for even me thinking about it at the time came up with this idea. Listen, Martin, you've been in the game 50 odd years. What do you think of the changes that have taken place in that time? And I never for one minute thought that you could get a book out of that. I thought you could have written the changes in about two parables. But there have, you know, the more that I started to think about it and do a little bit of research and stuff like this here, then I thought, yeah. And particularly adding maybe just a couple of little anecdotes, you know, for in the past. And interestingly, the opening of the book is actually my final day at Nottingham Forest. And that's really ironic, really, because I got sacked there in the very same room that I signed my first contract ever as a professional player, in exactly the same room. So it had come round full circle to me. And it was Mr. Marinakis, it was his chief executive and director of football, who brought me into the room and said, the way you run the football club, which I'd been running for 4 months, not 14 years, is not the way that we want it to be run. And so we're letting you go. And well, listen, you can laugh about it now, but I hadn't even left the little, after, I left that room after about 2 minutes. And then after that, I had to tell some of my backroom staff that we're no longer in employment there. And we're still in the room having a cup of tea, just telling them in my own little managerial room. And so 24 minutes after I'd been told the news, I was no longer there. They appointed the new manager. So, but it's the nature of the game. So
what do football managers think these days of others who are so willing to walk into their jobs so quickly? In that so many managers seem to be tapped up in advance of somebody being fired from the job.
It has happened throughout football. So it is not.
It's not new, is it?
It's not new. It seems to be more frequent now, and therefore it's just taken as a matter of fact that you know that that the minute that you step into a job, I think you realise, you know, used to be given a little bit of time. Certainly, if you go back over the 70s and the 80s when I was involved as a player, the managers, whether they were a Brian Clough or maybe a nondescript, seem to get a little bit more time to manage a football club, and less owners, less trigger happy, I should say, than they are now.
Although famously, Clough only got 44 days at Leeds.
No, that is interesting, but there were so many circumstances that couldn't have happened. One, first of all, as the Derby manager, and he criticised them. He said that they should throw their medals in the bin because they had cheated. He was dealing with the best players in England at the time. The best club in England, Leeds United, was so, so strong. So he hadn't a chance. And the very fact that he'd probably even forgotten they had said all of these things about Leeds.
And that they appointed him. But I also remember they courted you at one stage.
A couple of times when Peter Ridsdale was the chief executive of the football club.
If only.
And if only. If only. It's gone. But I was, twice. Once when I was Leicester and another time at Celtic. But I was loving my time at Celtic anyway. And in fairness, after a pretty difficult start at Leicester, I was loving that as well. And I only left Leicester City to go to Celtic. Might not have left it for other teams.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the way football is now. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you feel, example, about a bugbear of ours in this show, expected goals?
It's total nonsense. And would you agree with me?
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It's nonsensical. It doesn't mean anything. It's just another stat because people are playing.
How do they even calculate it?
Absolutely. I have no idea. I genuinely no idea.
And it doesn't matter anyway. Mm.
Exactly. So expected goals. It's like expected crowd. What crowd are you going to get into a game? And they'll soon be looking for the names and addresses of the people, you know, as well.
I think actually under data, they probably have all of that anyway.
That's true. But it's nonsensical. It doesn't mean a thing. And I don't know. I genuinely don't know. And whoever stuck it in shouldn't be allowed to be in the building.
But what do you think of all of these modern sort of data management, the whole thing, analytics for signing a player? Okay, does it have a role? Would you have ever employed it when you were signing players?
Right. Now, things have definitely moved on. And there is a place for data. There's no question about that. There is. But it is, you still must get a feel about a player. And you can't have two or three young lads just out of university looking into a machine and telling you this is good news or it's not so good news. You can put stats for anything that you want. You can build them up. You can do these things. There is room for that there, but you've still got to get a feel for the player.
What does it tell you about the character of a player? What do the stats actually tell you about how he performs in a pressure situation in a particular game?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if this particular player will have an agent, the agent will be sending in snippets of this lad.
Instagram showreels.
Absolutely. Tapping the ball up twice, you know, overhead kick maybe in this back garden or something like this here. But it's just, there's a room for it. But please don't have it overpowering, because it will get you in trouble.
When you were signing a player, did you actually have to have seen the player in person on a number of occasions before signing them?
Absolutely. I was I do accept that perhaps maybe in today's management that the manager might not have the time to do all of these things. That what an owner wants, he wants a coach. He wants a coach to coach the first team. The first team is made up of, 27 players or whatever the case may be, maybe a few more. So that's the role that the coach has now. There's very few have the autonomy, like Pep Guardiola, who has earned the right to do that. Klopp probably did that. And perhaps maybe in time, the new manager at Liverpool, because of his success, will be able to say, these are the players I want. And I don't want an A, B and a C. I want to have A, you know, player A. Now, when I was managing, I wanted to see the players. I wanted to see them. I made it my job to go and see the players, because eventually you will get a feel for the player. You won't necessarily know his character inside out, but you will get a feel for his character by the way he performs in the pitch.
But see, what you said there is interesting, because the structure of many professional football clubs, particularly in England, has changed to being a director of football who takes responsibility for transfers, and a head coach who just gets on with working what he is given. Mm-hmm. And does that really work? Well, there are a few clubs now. I know Daniel Farker at Leeds, for example, apparently does have the final say on all transfers and insisted on being named as manager rather than head coach. Should more managers insist on that?
I think so. Absolutely. Because this is what you are. You are a manager of a football team.
And you will pay with your job if they don't get the results, not necessarily the director of football.
Well, of course, this is the whole point. If Farker has done that, that is terrific. Really, really terrific. By getting Leeds United into the big division again, perhaps maybe he's earned the right to do that. So that's great that he has got the final say on players. That is not happening throughout the Premier League. It is just not. But you will have a director of football who will be coming in, who will be in the ear of the owner of the football club, saying these are the players that we should be getting. But his responsibility after that, it seems to evaporate, because if that player doesn't work out, it'll be because the manager's not using him properly.
Does it irritate you as somebody who now works in Premier Sports doing match analysis and the rest of it and still has very much an involvement? And I'm not accusing Premier Sports of being guilty of this, but overall in football, it's as if football was invented when the Premier League started in 1992. That the achievements that you would have had, say, with Nottingham Forest in winning the old First Division, winning European Cups, almost gets consigned to history. They suddenly start looking at the stats come up on the screen about the best Nottingham Forest goal scorer in Premier League history is Chris Wood. Well done, Chris Wood. But Chris Wood, has he scored as many goals as many of the great Nottingham Forest players of the past? Your Peter Witts or various Gary Birtles or whatever?
Absolutely. You know, but this is it. And is this, I'm going to ask you this question, is this something that we of, or sorry, me of a certain age feels that rather cynically that the game has just come in when Premier League started up in 1992, 93, I think it was, in that time. So yeah, listen, things are confined to history. Interestingly, I'm going to say this to you. Right, I know a very, very, very good journalist in England whose son is 22 or 23 years of age. Big Manchester United fan. 22 or 23, hadn't heard of Brian Robson.
You're kidding. And then what about Paul McGrath?
Well, that's the whole point. So that's crazy. How can you call yourself a big Manchester United fan at 22 or 23? So maybe it's
without knowing the history.
Absolutely.
Because it strikes me as well, and you write about this in the book, for all of the brilliance of Pep Guardiola, a lot of what he is doing, the hustling to get the ball back, which he brought in with Barcelona, brought to Bayern Munich, brought to Manchester City, as you point out, that's what Peter Taylor was doing at Nottingham Forest. And I wonder how many of our listeners would know, who was Peter Taylor?
This is the whole point. I do accept these things, just as you get older, that people just do not know. And that is true. I remember being young once, a way back. But Peter Taylor mentioned in a different format. In a different language. He said it was about getting good players into a football club, really good players, and get them hustling, which is exactly what Pep Guardiola did. Hustling, he meant, was getting the ball back as quickly as possible when you've lost it, because the good players in possession more often than the bad players will win football games for you.
You have a great line as well about how modern day football, some of the players seem more prepared to take risks in playing out from their own penalty area than they will take in trying to score a goal in the opposition penalty area.
Isn't it extraordinary? That's exactly what they do. Exactly. So the goalkeeper will pass it out to a fellow just on the edge of his box. He passes it back to the goalkeeper. Goalkeeper's rushed. He's now under pressure. He probably plays it out to... The left back position, but the left back's actually a right footed player. He's got himself in all sorts of trouble. And yet, when they finally get the ball up the pitch, and sometimes they don't even do that, when they finally get the ball up the pitch, when they've got it wide, you think, go on, take him on. Go on, you're a winger, take him on. Steps forward, plays it back, comes back into midfield. And by which time, the opposition have got every man back. So, right, no risks going forward, plenty of risks and plenty of heart attacks going in the other direction.
And I'm saying this only tongue-in-cheek, but the expected goals conceded as a result of playing out like that from the back.
Should come up. That might make more sense.
But does it make sense? And everybody seems to be doing it. Yeah. I mean, it's even as well, and we discussed this with Tony Cascarino last week, suddenly the long throw is back. Mm-hmm. And if the long throw is back, so when is the long ball? Pumping the long balls down a big centre forward is going to come back, because I see long passes, the percentage numbers are up this season in the Premier League. Yeah. Now, there's nothing wrong with a long pass, particularly a counter-attack, a good long ball, whatever, get a player away at pace if you're breaking. Can understand that. Mm. But are we thinking going to go back suddenly back to the future and end up with the big Peter Witt type centre forwards again, expected to win all the headers to knock them down? John Toshack for Kevin Keegan type stuff.
Well, if over the last couple of seasons, let me put, if you are looking at stats and you are looking, and let's say you're a manager and you have this philosophy of wanting to play out at the back, and yet it keeps letting you down because you keep conceding goals or near chances, and the opposition getting enthusiasm about your lack of the ability to play the ball out from the back. well, then surely you must think, well, maybe it's time to change. Maybe we should go a little bit a bit longer if that's the case. You don't have to be thumping everything up there. We didn't. We had Peter Wood. You keep mentioning Peter Wood. He was a fantastic centre forward. He was very, very strong. Could control the ball, but he was managed by a great manager who also was a centre forward, who told him time and time again his job was to get hold of the ball. Absolutely. And so anyway, your point about the long throw coming back into the game, and it is, and it's a tactic that's been used for years and years and years, and now it's back in vogue again. Fine, nothing wrong with it. Arsenal, for all their brilliance, and they are a very, very fine side, spend more time, spend loads and loads of goals from set pieces, corner kicks. Half the time they're fouling anyway, but you know, who cares at the end?
The only reason I mentioned Peter Wirth is because you played him. I could have used Mick Jones or Joe Jordan as well. Finally, though, do you still enjoy watching football as much as you used to, given all this change?
Right. I will always love football. And I think I think some of the changes that have taken place in the game have been very good. I'm not one to sit please and to say the game was great in my day. I had a great time playing in the 70s, a really great time, and I enjoyed my time as a manager. Or did I? Did I ever enjoy it? I'm not wildly sure about that. But overall, there's been some great things that have happened in the game. The thing that disappoints me most, or irritates me most, or really galls me, is the play acting now. It is when, as I was speaking to Graham Souness a couple of weeks ago, and Graham Souness, who was
a
dirty but brilliant footballer, he said it's just driving him insane. During our time of play, when you got hurt, you didn't want to show that you were hurt. You wouldn't have rolled over four or five times. You would have picked yourself up, and if you're cut, as generally Graham Souness was cutting people rather than being cut, then you just get on with it. You genuinely get on with the game. Here now, it's reached a new low.
There is one other thing I want to ask you. I don't know if you want to answer this one, because it's about one of your successors as the Irish manager, Heimar Hallgrímsson, who's had a tough time, dreadful results recently. He said he didn't bring in a psychologist to work with the team. He brought a fitness expert. That's all he had the budget for, which made me wonder a couple of things. One, at international level, do you need a fitness consultant? Because presumably the players have trained back with their clubs. But secondly, is it the job of the manager, first priority, to be the team's and the individual player's psychologist?
I've always felt this. No, two things. There's nothing wrong with bringing in a fitness coach, because even though the players will have a club fitness, you still want to do little things with them for the couple of days that you have the players. It's not much. It's a warm up, a warm down, things like this here that you probably don't really want to get involved in. It's during your moments of with the players when they've been warmed up, and now you're ready to start doing your little bits of work in preparation for the international game. I have no problem with that. There, in recent times, we've had a fitness coach, and I'm all on for that. There, if that's all the budget allows, the psychologist part is that this is maybe a bit of a cynical view, and maybe it's an old-fashioned view. I always felt that I was the psychologist. I was the manager. I'm the one. If I bring a psychologist in, and sometimes maybe the players might gravitate to him, to listen to him, because he might be softer on them than perhaps I would be. I couldn't see that working. Now, it didn't. I never had a psychologist, and I'm not so sure, even if I went back into the game now at the ripe old age that I am, that I would employ a psychologist, because I always felt that that was my job. It's a bit like having... What on earth would you want a throw-in coach for? A throw-in coach. Now, seriously, now the game, there's some great things about the game. Don't get me wrong, but pitches are fantastic. Some lovely footballers still to enjoy. Really, really great. Still a simple game.
Martin O'Neill, the book is The Changing Game, The Past, Present and Future of Football. It has been great having you with us.
Oh, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And thank you very much for asking me again.
the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.